This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
What's up, peeps? Welcome back to Rebound and Safety. Let's jump into the intro. I'll tell you some more about today's episode.
The problem in safety isn't deviation, it's complexity.
Health and safety has gone mad.
Health and safety is trying to unpick having gone mad in the past.
There's no one solution or one problem. The problem is that we are looking for one solution.
Does the structure of the team allow them to flourish?
Feel safe enough to be uncomfortable.
The environment defines our behaviours.
People aren't the problem, they're the solution.
Rebranding safety, crushing a stereotype. Brought to you by RiskBlue.
What's up, peeps? Welcome back to Rebranding Safety. Rebranding Safety is a YouTube channel and podcast doing exactly what it says on the tin. So if you're new here, hit that subscribe button, all the magical algorithm buttons, whatever it is, we appreciate it. Today we're talking to an amazing guy called Prakash. Prakash has got an amazing brain and knowledge and passion for tech, AI and safety, and is using all of those to create some amazing bits of work, basically. That's probably the best I could do in my lack of techie knowledge to explain it. And why would I want to explain it? Because we're going to talk about it in today's episode. So today we're going to talk primarily about AI in safety, where it is, what it looks like, the risk, how do we use it, and so on and so forth. Before we do that, though, let's get into a quick message from our sponsors. Paradigm Human Performance, and more specifically, the HSC Subscription Service, is a sponsor of Rebranding Safety. HSC Subscription Service from Paradigm is the absolute nailed-on perfect solution for small, medium-sized enterprises who want to put worker safety as a core DNA of their organization. If you're a small, medium-sized enterprise, it's quite likely that you're juggling a hell of a lot of balls, and sometimes safety just one ball that you just can't. You can't keep track of. Ultimately, everything that we do in safety is built on a foundation of compliance. It is there. It is what we have to do. If we're not compliant, we're going to get shut down and we can't do anything. You cannot move on to human organizational performance, if you have safety two, new view, whatever, without a foundation, a scaffold of compliance and all the technical safety stuff. And that is what the HSC subscription service is absolutely nailing for you. Paradigm Human Performance is a subscription service, not going to be an off-the-shelf compliance package. It's going to have HOP woven throughout it because that's what they are, human organizational performance experts. So if you're keen and if you think this is right for you, you can call them directly on the phone number in the description below, and you can email them on the email address in the description below. If you're still not sure, you can go check them out at their website, also in the description below. And if you do go to the website, make sure you check out the Learning Organization webinar. It's an outstanding resource. Without further ado, let's get into my chat with the amazing Prakash. Right, Prakash, welcome to Rebranding Safety.
Hi, how you doing, James?
Not bad, mate. Not bad. Thank you very much. Not bad. We have not planned this conversation whatsoever. We had a little bit of an introduction call and we ended up talking for like nearly an hour. So we thought, screw it, let's just do that again and see what happens. These are my favorite types of conversation as well. The ones where you no plan, no subject, just let's see where this goes. Cool. But we're obviously going to talk around kind of AI and technology in the safety industry, because that's what you do. So without further ado, why don't you give us an introduction to yourself and then also the work that you're doing? And then I think from there, my curiosity will keep us going, and then your good intellectual answers will keep us going as well.
No, certainly. I can do the first part. I don't know about the second part. I'm Prakash Singhani. I'm based out of Dubai, and I wear a couple of hats. So I guess my day job is I work with a large consultancy doing sort of program management consulting in the construction space, where I specifically look at how we can digitize the things that we do to make them safer, improve quality, add value. And that's across the piece, right? That's not just in safety. That's in project management. That's in design. That's in construction. That's in operations. So it's part of this sort of wave of digital transformation that we're seeing in the industry. The second hat, and literally I'm wearing it, I've founded a startup where we've developed an artificial intelligence powered safety management system, which utilizes a chatbot as its main interface to capture safety information and also to disseminate it back out. And we can talk a little bit later on if we want. And then the third hat, I guess, is tying those two things together. It's also I've started investing in construction technology, and my personal interest is in how technology can be utilized to make things safer, right? I have a huge passion around utilizing technology to make things that we do safer. Our industry is known as being one of the biggest killers globally in any other industry. And I've personally been affected by it. So my dad suffers from a long-term injury that he picked up whilst working in the construction. And I've worked on projects where people have unfortunately lost their lives and seen the impact that that's had on not just the team, immediate team, but the family and the project as a whole.
Yeah, so this is driven personally for you as well. And passion as well. I think you've got quite a passion for tech and stuff, haven't you? Last week.
Yeah. And I guess anybody who knows me says that I've got this sort of infectious enthusiasm. And most of the time it's around tech and specifically around construction technology. I'm a huge advocate of the utilization of technology, where it's going to add value. And I guess where I really think that I've succeeded is I'm able to see where technology can be applied to a problem rather than just think, okay, this is a cool piece of tech. Let's try and find somewhere where we can apply it, right? Mm-hmm. So I tend to try and approach it from the angle of, okay, here's a problem. What technological solutions are out there, or could we put a couple of them together to try and solve this problem? So I guess that's what I enjoy doing. I've definitely got a huge amount of passion and enthusiasm for those things.
Before we go any further, I'm really curious, what is that massive cannon behind your head?
This one here.
Yeah.
That's my telescope.
That looks awesome.
It's a really, really fantastic piece of kit, actually. It's one of these telescopes where you can basically tell it what time it is, give it roughly your GPS coordinates, and then point it at three stars, and so it knows where it is in the world. And then you can just say, okay, point at Mars, and there's a robot inside it. There's a robotics inside it that basically guides you and points the telescope at Mars, and then it'll follow it all night as well. So it'll
track it. And can you what can you see when it like you look for it and it, you say point it at Mars, for example? Like how detailed can you see out of that?
So Mars comes up, I guess, probably. It's tiny, right? You got to remember it's tiny. But you can, when Mars was at its closest, like towards the end of last year, you could make out the fact that it had a white cap, an ice cap at the top of Mars. It was really, really small, but you could make that out. But obviously, things like the Moon, you can see the rings of Saturn on it. You can see the red spot on Jupiter. You could make it out. That's on it. So it's pretty decent, pretty detailed.
That's sick, man. I knew it was something cool. I was looking at it. I'm like, if that's not like a prototype Iron Man blaster or an epic kind of something.
That's another thing that I've really sort of gotten into over this whole lockdown period over the last year is sort of astrophotography. I've always been fascinated with space. Never had an opportunity to own a telescope. And just before we went into lockdown, I moved jobs. And I rewarded myself with this. I bought myself a telescope, and cool. Yeah, it's been really good because I've had time right in the evenings because we're not going anywhere. I've had time in the nighttime to play around with it and get up to scratch with it.
Yeah, that's funny, man. I think there's so many people that have kind of just gone, you know, I've always wanted to do that, so I'm just gonna do like don't get me wrong, people have really suffered through this pandemic, and my heart goes out to all of them, but. You know, you've got to take the wins out of these horrible times, haven't you? And I think so many people have had a realization to do the things that they wish they'd always done, or pick up the hobby that they wish. You know, for me, obviously, we make videos all the time. So I've got a pretty good camera sitting in the house. And as a kid, I used to love taking photos of stuff. And then I never really took it up. But like through learning YouTube, majority of them are like mad photographers as well. So I'm just like, I'd love to be able to take good photos. Yeah. I just started doing it. I've got a camera. When I walk the dog in the morning or go for a walk or whatever, I'm just going to take my camera with me, get over that social awkwardness of like this guy taking photos, and just take some photos and see what happens. And now I'm like, it's bad really, because I haven't got time, but I'm so addicted to it now.
Yeah.
Taking a photo, bring it back in, editing it and processing it. And I'm just like, oh my God, look at this. Like, and obviously we've just had a baby girl. She's like 7 months old. So taking photos of her is like just so much fun.
That's brilliant. Brilliant. And I think it was similar to this, right? Learning what all of these different acronyms and that mean and what they do at your ISO and focal length and all of that stuff. I feel you. I get it.
You become geeks of something else now.
I think it's in our nature, right? When you're a geek in one thing, you generally there'll be a number of different areas that you can go and geek out in as well, right?
Yeah, you're just a geek in general. You're just a geek in general. definitely.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you mentioned like people taking up things and trying to make the best out of a bad situation. And I guess that's what it's been with safety.ai as well, right? So we kind of started it up a year before the whole COVID situation, and then just throughout the whole pandemic period. We've been able to spend a little bit more time on it just because, you know, we've had the evenings and the weekends not doing other things. And because it's something that we enjoy, so me and my partners and the co-founders, we've been able to accelerate. I think I don't think that we would be where we are today with it if it hadn't been for the pandemic.
Mate, I can relate to that. Me and my business partner, we launched Project Meletium mid-COVID. Mid-lockdown, we'd actually not met each other face-to-face before. I think we had like three customers and we'd still not met. We were joint directors of the company and so on and forth. We'd launched, we got people paying the bills and we were just like, you know what, we've never actually met. How crazy is that? But COVID gave us this opportunity. We were talking before COVID, but we didn't launch a business, obviously. We launched halfway through. But we'd never met, and then but what COVID gave us the opportunity is just time, like you say. You know, in the evenings we're just sitting here. So I was just like, right, I do need to spend time with my family, but other than that, let's slot out some times where we can make this work. And you know, sometimes you just, all three of us are just sitting around going, we haven't got anything to do. So I'm just like, oh man, I'm just going to go and do some work on Project Meletium, you know, it's gone nuts, and it's just I'm. Personally, again, you know, doesn't devalue the kind of the horrible things that have happened to people and the amount of lives we've lost. But for me personally, in so many ways, COVID has actually been a saving grace. Like with my baby girl as well, like she was born, you know, mid-pandemic. I've had an extended paternity leave, you know, because I'm working from home. So I'm with her every single day, which most men, unfortunately, or the other partner that's not, that's going back to work, that's having the paternity leave kind of section, then you get 2 weeks, you know. So if you're that kind of co-parent, kind of co-partner, that's not the one staying at home, you get 2 weeks. COVID has given me an opportunity to spend every single day with her. It's like in between Zoom calls, I can just jump in, have a quick cuddle, and then come back to work.
You never get that opportunity. Otherwise, you would never have got that opportunity. So, look, I'm the same as you. I've been personally affected by COVID. A very close friend. The reason we're doing this call now and didn't do it a month ago was because we went through a bereavement, and a very close friend of mine here in Dubai, unfortunately, come to it. But having said that, right, if you take some of that, there is obviously huge amounts of sadness across the world, and it's still continuing. If we bring it back to a personal level, there's lots of stories like this, right, where people have rediscovered the time with their family, or rediscovered a hobby, and taken up gardening, or like taken up other things. And also, there's also the other flip side of like the mental health aspect, right? There's people saying that their mental health has deteriorated because of it. But I'm also hearing the opposite as well, is people have now become a lot less stressed because of work and that. So look, I think that there's good and bad in everything, and you've got to try and make the best of every situation that you get handed, right? And that's all you can do.
Definitely mate. Right, let's get into this then. So you are doing AI and safety. I'm going to kick us off with a very strong statement that I think I kicked us off in our last chat with, but this how do I put this? I love technology. Like, I love it. I see it. Am I a tech geek? Like, I love seeing what technology can do. Like, I'm just so amazed sometimes when I see something and I'm just like, now that's cool. Now that's really cool. You know, and I love a great example of technology fixing a problem, a great example of technology in COVID is right now. You know, you're going to sit in a pub and they're doing ordering, well, in the UK at least, ordering your drinks and stuff over the phone. Personally, I'm a social person, but like, I could do with not being social all the time. So sometimes I'm just like, I don't want to get up and go to the bar and do that. Sometimes I do, but I would like the option to just sit on my phone and go, I want this, 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 and this. Thank you very much. Bring it over. Yeah. So for me, I'm like, yes. And then, you know, some of the technology, like I say, doing photography and stuff, I'm just like, wow, that's amazing. The stuff it can do is phenomenal.
Yeah.
But in safety, it makes me a little bit nervous. And it's not the tech that's the problem. In my opinion, that's not the tech that makes me, it's how we use it. So I'm seeing a lot of like stuff coming up, and I've had loads of people message me, and what I'm seeing a lot of, Prakash, and I think we've spoke about this before, is tech being used to just do the same old crappy safety that we've done for so long. Like, oh, we've got these AI cameras or whatever in, and that's going to highlight when the worker's not wearing PPE, and that puts it in their record, and then we talk about it in a meeting. So we just punish the worker. And now it's just like, I'm just like, man, this just sounds like some kind of like Blade Runner kind of scenario. Do you know what I mean? Where we're just going to have all these cameras just watching workers. And then it's like, sounds like slave labor, and it's just horrible. So yeah. I'm really excited about tech, but at the same time, a little bit nervous that we use it in the wrong way. Like how do you agree? And two, if you do, how do you kind of keep that in mind as you're working and developing in this space?
Look, I completely agree with you, and it's not just in construction. This is an issue, right? It's the utilization of tech cuts both ways in everything. Look at social media, for example, right? Mm-hmm. There's one aspect of it is it helps you keep connected with people all around the world, and then there's so many positive aspects of it. But then you've got things like election rigging and reinforcing stereotypes and things like that, right? Reinforcing mm-hmm. negative messages and things like that. So to the sort of crux of it, it's all around people and procedures. And you touched on it in terms of safety, where you've got this fantastic tech, and you're talking about vision learning, right? It's a subset of artificial intelligence where you can take photographs or video streams, and the computer can automatically start analyzing it and start spotting problems and things like that. And one of the biggest sort of touted ones that in their infinite wisdom, these sort of tech guys have come up with is that, look, our system can spot when people are doing stuff wrong, and then you can go and then administer them. And people, that's because these guys are tech guys who've come up with a technological solution and are looking for a problem to apply it to, not the other way around, where, okay, we're looking at how do you solve safety, right? And safety is about people. It's about people wanting to do the right thing. It's about people not wanting to harm others and kill people. And it's about people sharing experiences. For me, safety is all about sharing lessons learned, right? You're never going to be able to get away from things going wrong, right? Just human nature, circumstances, the world, stuff is going to, unfortunately, is going to happen. What you can do, though, is minimize the risk of it happening by eliminating some of it completely, or by making sure that when stuff does happen, you learn about it. Or when you do good things, you teach other people what those good things are. And I think so that's the sort of angle that we're approaching safety.ai with, is we're trying to, one, democratize safety, right? We're trying to make safety everybody's responsibility, not just people with safety in their title. That's something that's really, really important to me. And I think that the barrier to that at the moment is the interfaces that we've got. So these interfaces, one, are controlled by safety management people, and two, they are so cumbersome and frictionful. And so I just want to take that away completely. And so the reason that we've sort of chosen a text-based chat application type of interface is because people are used to doing that in their everyday lives, right? How many times a day do you open up WhatsApp and message your mates and do stuff about it? And actually, on a lot of the projects that I work on, there's WhatsApp groups for safety. People are sending pictures, discussing issues, incidents that are happening around safety. And what I want to do is just bridge those two things together and just get everybody involved. And because it's almost like this informal text-based communication, I think people let their guard down a little bit. And that really helps in terms of sharing ideas, sharing best practices. And people are, I think, and what we are seeing, are one, more willing to do it. So we're getting more and more data. And then two, they you're getting better insights into it rather than if you have to go and sit down formally in front of a desktop, fill out this very formal looking form. The way that you type, the psychology of what you're typing in, it is very formal as well, right? So I think you lose a little bit of the knowledge and the lessons learned from that.
Mm. This is fascinating. I think so your kind of process is kind of from a very layman's point of view, and this might be offensive to the amount of work you put in, but to me it sounds very similar to, you know, when you talk to like on a website and it's like get help, and that's like an AI. It's quite obviously an AI. It feels like it's like that in a safety version.
Very, very much so. And I don't take offense to that at all. And that's exactly what we're trying to do, right? Is like you just mentioned, you're used to talking to a chatbot when you're on an e-commerce site or something like that, or you're on you're about to buy insurance for your car, this little thing pops up and then you're talking to it. And you're right. Currently about 60 or 70% of those interactions are with a machine learning enabled chatbot. And that's exactly what we're going to do here. And then the other element of what we're doing is, you know, sometimes when you're filling out some sort of form to do with safety, you get a massive drop-down list. Maybe like there's 20 or 30 different options. Like if we're trying to get everybody involved in safety, you're not necessarily going to know what the right answer is from a list of 30, right? Unless you're specifically being trained to know that this thing has got to do with behaviors, or this thing has got to do with working at height. Like, you know, like you're not going to know unless you're part of the profession. And so the other element of what we're doing is using what people have inputted previously. So when they've talked to the bot to do with something, is to reduce that list down to what the top five are by using previous data to predict what the answer might be. So that helps in two ways. One, it helps to improve the quality of the data, because what we found is that when you've got this massive list, people just pick the top one or just randomly pick something, which diminishes the quality of the data. And the other thing is that it makes it quick, right? People have to think less about which one to choose from this 30, and they only have to pick from, let's say, a curated list of five. That gets stronger and stronger, so that prediction gets stronger the more it's used, because we're using machine learning models.
Mm. How do you kind of get it to like learn the right thing? Like, do you know when you said about the visual learning thing, right? Yeah. You know what piqued my interest there when you said that, it's like it reminds me of like the whole profiling shit that we got in like the terrorism kind of aviation space, and like the amount of people that were kind of wrongly judged based just on the profile of what they visually looked like. If we'd have give that into, and then maybe they did, but if we'd have give that into like a visual learning system, Jesus, anyone of a certain, you know, of a certain color, you know, facial hair, long hair, and so on. You would just get pinged straight away, wouldn't you? Pinged, and you're just like, dude, I'm just trying to go to fucking Spain just to have a break. Yeah. Like, do you know what I mean? Yeah. And it's kind of, so for me, it was kind of like, we make these mistakes as humans. Like, we think that's a good idea. It makes sense. You're like, oh yeah, okay, that would help us identify stuff like this. Mm-hmm. And then we put that into a machine, and that keeps learning and keeps learning. And then next thing you know, you've just got like a purely racist system. Like, how do you kind of stop stuff like that happening in safety? And maybe that's not a good example. Maybe it is. But like, you know, how, as you're building your system and you're maybe keeping that in mind, how do you, because that scares me. That's what scares me. Is it learning the wrong lesson?
And it scares me as well. And so what you touched on is bias, right? It's bias in your training data. And unfortunately, as humans, we all have it, right? We get ingrained with bias from lots of sources. Sometimes it comes from our parents, right? Our parents' biases get imposed upon us. We get biases from the media, everything that we're reading. And so if you're reading a certain type of thing, and this is where social media is really, really dangerous, right? Because it tends to curate and give you stuff that matches the way that you think. It's not really a diversity of thought. And so it reinforces some of the biases that you've got. And when obviously these algorithms and machine learning code are coded by people, right? And those people's biases end up inside the algorithms, right? So you end up putting these essentially baking these biases in. And there's lots of examples of what you just mentioned about how AI systems inherently become racist and homophobic and sexist, right? There's huge examples. There's like recruitment is a perfect example. I've got a friend who's got a startup called WorkPanda, and he's looking at how he can introduce AI into the recruitment process within construction. And you've got to be so careful because, so let's say you train your algorithms to spot the best candidates for, crane operator, right? We know that currently most of the crane operators are male. So their CVs, their profiles and everything, all the data that you're going to have is going to be biased towards a male who's probably going to be of a fairer complexion, right? And so when you train your algorithm, it gets used to looking for things that are going to be applicable to that trait. So then when it sees a CV from somebody who doesn't match that profile, it automatically derates them. And then it reinforces this constantly. And then if they get the job, that goes into the training pile for the next one, all right? And so you can see how this can get very, very dangerous.
And then
the same thing happens, right? So there's lots of examples of how, like, facial recognition, for example, is rubbish at recognizing dark-skinned women, right? So it, because majority of the data that is being trained upon has been light-skinned males, right? So it'll recognize light-skinned males really, really well. There's reports on how Alexa doesn't respond to women as well as it does to men, because it's been programmed by men, right? Yeah. So there's scientific reports, right, that show how Alexa is basically responding better when a male gives a command, because it's been trained on the way males speak, some of their phrases, and what they understand, right? And this all goes to sort of speaks to the imbalances and the inequalities in some of these fields like computing and stuff like that. So going back to your question, right? How do we try and stop this? One is recognizing that it exists. So look, the fact that you brought it up, the fact that you know that it exists, and me being in this sort of space and knowing that it exists, I think that's the first step, right? It's not burying your head in the sand, not pretending that this isn't a problem. And then, so I guess it starts with that. And then there are certain tools that you can do, right? So there are now actually AI tools that you can use to help you take out some of the bias. So you can sort of almost generate AI data, which helps you fill in the gaps for areas where you've got a weakness. And I'll give you a perfect example. So when we were training our algorithms to predict hazard types, an overwhelming number of hazard types were to do with housekeeping, right? Because that's the most popular observation that people make, right? When they're recording observation, housekeeping seems to be the one that goes on the top. And so our algorithm was like at 98% accurate when we had a problem with housekeeping. But for things like a lack of signage, because that's such a rare observation, it was something like 62% accurate. So we had to start inventing training data so that we could bring up the one for signage, for example, or lack of signage, and actually cut out some of the housekeeping one so that we can have a balance of the training data. So there's tools like that you can use to start taking up the bias. But understanding that it exists and knowing that it's there, I think that's the start.
And I suppose you could take a lot of those lessons from humans, because we do that. Like, with our accident data has led us for so many years, and we now we're like, oh, look at all these slips, trips that we're getting, and housekeeping is the main call. And don't get me wrong, you know, there's stuff you need to manage. You do need to manage that stuff. I get that, but it shouldn't be hard to manage that stuff. Like, but my point here is that we put so much time, effort, and resources into the low risk stuff because they're more common. We end up under resourcing our significant risk, which then ultimately, you know, cause a fatality or a serious incident, which is the battle of the transition or the journey that we're going through in safety right now is understanding that we need to focus on the big stuff, never lose the focus on the big stuff. So you can see the flaws in humans, which you're trying to repair. But like you say, you just need to acknowledge them and say, we don't want to copy those flaws into a computer that's, you know, twice as more intelligent than us. Because I think when you get like, there's the relationship between the two is interesting to me, because I think I was listening to it, but I think I mentioned it to you last time. Like when we look at this and we're going and that really interesting thing is you're saying like the biases of the kind of, you know, the person that makes it just gets inherited by the machine is just mind blowing, a little bit scary. Like you have to really make sure that the person writing this algorithm is not a complete dickhead, you know, otherwise you just, I mean, like the risk there is massive. So, and that just makes me think about this interrelationship we have between these two. And it reminded me of this podcast that I listened to a while ago that said, everybody thinks that the computers are going to replace the frontline workers. But this guy was saying, actually, what they're going to replace is managerial issues because they're really good at making decisions quick. And I was just like, ooh, that doesn't make me feel comfortable as a safety professional because work is complex and people are complicated and it's not as simple as a, it's kind, you know, it's kind of like that greater good question, isn't it? Is it better to kill one person or 100 person? Well, obviously, yeah. from a computer's point of view, that's just doing the maths, they kill one to save 100.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
with humans, it's not as simple as that. Like, morally, do we want to kill one or do we want to take the risk and try and save 100? Like, oh, how do you even answer that question? But an AI wouldn't make that kind of moral decision. Yeah. It would just go, well, this is obvious. It killed the one. You know what I mean? So the fact of seeing AIs in businesses making decisions, which is what this guy said on his podcast, that makes me nervous. So there must be some kind of oversight we also need, that interrelationship as this continues to learn and learn and learn from the human as well, or humans, so to speak.
Yeah, look, I think this notion that we're all going to be replaced by some sort of AI or all of our jobs are going to be taken away, I think it's a fallacy. And even if that were to happen, it's probably centuries away, right? Like if you this sort of harbinger of fear, right? It happens at every single industrial revolution. So they're saying that we're currently in the throes of the fourth industrial revolution. Every single industrial revolution before this, right, whether it was the printing press or the steam machine or whatever, every single time they've said, like, these things are going to come in, no one's going to have any work, what are we all going to do, everyone's going to become poor. But what actually happens, yes, there is some attrition of work, but it repurposes, right? People have different skill sets can become more valuable and people retrain and
upskill and
exactly, right? And there's jobs that currently don't exist suddenly become existent, right? They start emerging. And so humans are always going to be required, right? And artificial intelligence is good at a certain type of intelligence, but we all know that human intelligence is made up of so many different facets, right? There's the emotional intelligence and like which you alluded to. And currently, right now, artificial intelligence is just very good at one specific thing. It's particularly utilizing historical information and making predictions about what that might mean in the future. Other than that, it's not very good. It's shit at doing everything else, right? and even the decision-making, I would argue that what current AI gives you, it gives you options, right? And I think that what we need to do is then take humans to use those options and make a decision, right? But where you are starting to see some of this prevalence happening is in things like autonomous vehicles, where in a split second, some of these cars are going to have to make that decision, like you just said, right? If this car is now veering and it sees a kid versus a group of older people, what's the decision that it's going to make? Do I run over this kid because it's one, or do I go into this group of people which is 10? Mm. I'm going to kill one kid, but this group of people might be older and they've lived most of their life, and this kid's got the rest of his life to go. And so there are all of these nuances, right? Mm. We would go into that. And that's the emotional intelligence that you were alluding to. So, look, I agree with you. I don't know. You branded me as an expert in this. I'm not an expert in this. I'm on the journey. I'm learning about this thing. I'm as fascinated by it as you are. And I don't know what the right or wrong answer is. I just know that we've got a huge responsibility as an AI company, as a safety AI company, to make sure that we're doing as much as we possibly can to do good, right? To ultimately, we want to come into this and save lives, right? What we don't want to do is start making things worse, right? Because that would be the absolute most terrible thing that I could have done, is if we come into this and we're getting more people told off, or we're starting to people are starting to lose their jobs because of this. I genuinely want to make the industry safer by utilizing tech and empower people to be part of safety.
I love the way you talk about it, man. Like that utilize, because it's actually like you say that, that AI is really shit at a load of stuff, but actually we're also really shit at stuff. Like we're not very good at, I can't remember what it, whether it was a book or a podcast, but it said it, historically humans are pretty poor at making predictions. Like we're not very good at it. Even the best people in the world that are kind of renowned at predicting the stocks and shares and all that, they're really not that good at it. Like they're just a little bit better than everyone else. And I think acknowledging that and saying, well, we're really shit at this, collecting data, analyzing data, and so on and so forth, getting that, acknowledging that and getting an AI to say, you know, present me with the, you know, statistically speaking, the highest possible, you know, possibility or whatever. And I think as well, what you see in, what you see in technology that's really, really good is like all this stuff around like psychometric tests. Like the shit that comes out of a psychometric test, man, is just like, what? How the hell did you? You asked me whether 1 + 1 = 4, and I said, I don't know. Yeah. You've gone, it's pretty obvious you've got some really daddy, really big daddy issues. And I'm just like, what? How did you work that out? So, like, I don't, is that AI or is that just an algorithm or what? Do you know anything about those? Or?
Yeah, some of it is. So they're starting to use AI in some of this, in some of this sort of psychometric analysis and stuff like that. But traditionally, what you're talking about is basically decision trees, right? So they're saying if you chose this, this is what you're likely to be sort of dealing with or facing. And so it's an algorithm, but a much more linear or flat algorithm rather than one that's got any sort of AI associated with it. But it's a huge sort of area and a space, and I'm glad you talk about psychology, because I think psychology also has an impact in AI as well, and that's something that's very rarely spoken about, right? The human element coming into AI, and that's another thing that we're looking at as well, is making sure that when our bot is speaking to people and interacting with people, it's mindful, right? We're trying to make it as human as possible. So like we're trying to get it to be a little bit humorous and trying to insert a little bit of lightheartedness into it. Obviously, there's a sensitive balance. Safety is a very serious thing, but I'm a huge believer that if we can humanize it, we can get much better data. And then the other element of it is also, I'm a real big proponent of looking at the health side of health and safety. So when usually health and safety comes together, everybody looks at safety, right? Because it's the one that has the bigger impacts and things like that. And very rarely does anybody talk about the health. And so I'm also trying to ensure that we include that into it. And so we're working with psychologists at the moment to see how we can, you know, simple things like asking people how they are at the end of an interaction, and then asking like how their day went, or there's a few simple tools that we can do that can really, really change the way people's perception of AI tools and safety management systems are, you know.
Wouldn't it be amazing if we, like, this visual learning and kind of verbal learning and written learning, all of these different types of AI, instead of using them to spot when they're not wearing PPE and whip them, wouldn't it be amazing if we, and maybe someone would be like, this is the breach of privacy, and maybe it is, and I'm just thinking out loud, but like, what if we utilize these systems, be able to pick up those subtleties in a change in the way you typed an email, or the change in your posture, or you know, trends in people, to be able to highlight, I think that person might really be suffering with something, notify the manager, FYI, I think Prakash is really suffering from something here, and here's the data to back that up. You know, we can see on this visual learning, his posture's really changed. You know, that's an indication for this. And yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like how amazing would that be? Now, someone might be like, oh, I don't want a computer working out whether I've got mental health, you know, challenges. But if I think of it from a what we're trying to do in mental health is to try and educate our managers to be able to build relationships, to be able to spot these things.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be amazing if we had a system that was there to look after our people? And maybe that was the original intent of things like iRobot, and then they ended up killing us all. But do you know what I mean? It's like that would be so much nicer to see.
I completely agree with you. And so this new sort of track that we're going down to safety AI is the very beginnings of that. And look, I'm not going to say I'm professing the fact that we've solved it, but the inception or the whole premise of that is exactly that, right? Is to start spotting some of these things, even in the subtle, like you mentioned, the subtle way in which they respond. Has the length of their reply suddenly got shorter? Does that mean that they're thinking about something else and they've reduced what they want to say? So there's obviously a change in behavior there. Can we say something about that? The other element of it, I guess, is that you don't necessarily have to alert a manager, right? Because you remember this bot, what we're trying to get it to do is almost become your friend. So the bot might be able to, like, you know, say, do you want to phone this number, or do you want me to inform a manager? Do you know what I mean? There's other ways of doing it instead of just without their permission, flagging that they've got it. Use their permission to say, okay, these are the tools, and these are advise them that they maybe should go and speak to their manager, right? Rather than do it for them, don't take the decision away from them. So look, I'm learning about all this as well, right? This is a completely new minefield for me to be going into. But again, it's another fascinating area and a huge one because it concentrates on the health part of health and safety.
Mm. Oh, I love that. That's exciting. That's exciting. And that's what I mean. When I look at this stuff, I feel like there's so much potential in this. Yeah. We just got to utilize it for the right things. And for me, I think that it comes back to what you talk about. It's that, how can we use this to complement the human as opposed to control, probably is the best word. And how do we kind of make this work for the human? There's so many times that and I think the other thing you said earlier, actually, which I thought was really powerful, which is funny because I had that exact same line come off my mentor the other day when we were talking about stuff. And she was like, we need to work out what the problem is before we get the solution. Like, safety people can be so solutions focused, like, oh, there's a solution, and they don't even know what the problem is.
Yeah.
And it's funny you just said that the tech industry pretty much can do the same sometimes.
All the time, right? There's so many people... I've met, like, in my day job, right, in developing and identifying and deploying digital tools, right, so many people come to me pitching different tools or whatever, and it's like, okay, like, you've got this fantastic and very, very smart, clever piece of technology, but what's the problem that you set out to solve? It's like you developed this technology, and now you're looking for a problem that is going to apply to you, and that is just us about it, right? That's totally the wrong way of looking at it. Yeah, I'm a huge advocate, and it frustrates me massively, right? It frustrates me hugely when people are trying to go through this sort of digital transformation and that, and they've already made their mind up that I want this type of software, this technology, or this piece of hardware or whatever, because they've seen their mates use it or their competitors using it or someone. They're not looking at their own particular program, project, company, industry, and say, actually, these are the problems that we need to solve. These are the things that are going to... be the most value add for us, and so let's look at what technologies are out there, or maybe even develop our own technologies to solve this particular problem. And that, for me, that's the fundamental problem, right? Is that people are forgetting that they have issues, and some issues, right? Don't forget, they don't have to have a technological solution. Some issues or problems, you can solve by simply changing a procedure or innovation at the moment, right, is just become synonymous with technological innovation, right? Technological development. People automatically think that innovation equals technology, and it doesn't, right? You can have innovation in processes. You can have innovation in procedures. There's lots of different ways of doing it. People, exactly, right?
So, okay, I'm going to put you on the spot here then. What problem are you trying to solve? You've built a solution. Answer your own question then. What problem are you trying to solve?
So I think it's multifold, right? One, safety management systems are the preserve of safety professionals, right? I think, and I think that the problem I'm trying to solve is how do we democratize that? How do we get more people involved and take responsibility for their own safety as well as the safety of their colleagues? And so I truly believe that that's down to the way people interact with that system, right? The current way of doing it is very database driven. It's driven by people who can who know the lingo, who've been trained on the lingo. So I want to change that completely and make it the same way that you send a text message to a friend or your missus or whatever. I want them to be able to interact with, say, our safety bot in that same way and help to manage safety, be part of the safety solution. I think the other part of it is that most systems are very selfish, right? They always take, they always want you to input data. And then somebody in the background then analyzes that data and makes some decisions on it. Yeah. So what I want to do is to start pushing data back out to people using the same intuitive interface, right? So when the data is coming in, we'll analyze it. And in some parts, the analysis will be automated through a different version of AI. It'll start spotting trends and patterns. And it'll start pushing these trends and that back out to people. So they feel like they're getting something back out from it, right? So it's not a one-way street. It's not that I'm just putting this stuff into this black hole. Actually, the more I put in, the more stuff I'll get back out. I'll get interesting tidbits back. I'll get interesting insights. So you can actually see how you're contributing to making a difference.
Okay. Yeah. Isn't that funny? You're trying to kind of personalize a safety management system with an AI. To me, that just sounds so ironic, doesn't it? But I can kind of get it. Like, that's so fascinating. Like, when you...
That is a very, very good point. That's a fantastic perspective. I can see the irony in it. I can definitely see the irony in it.
But it's kind of, I kind of get it as well. Like, if we go back to your original point of like the biases thing. So when you're writing something and your bias goes into that, well, safety management systems will be exactly the same. If I'm writing a safety management system, it will be towards my biases, which are definitely the more softer side of things, more relationship focused, more social psychology kind of focused, more people centered. But if you're not that way inclined, you're much more kind of procedural driven, systems driven, you're much more an engineered kind of background, then maybe the biases will be more procedural, more command and control. I don't know. I'm thinking out loud, but you get what I'm going with this. And traditionally, safety has been so biased towards compliance and command and control. So that be a problem. And then what we're trying to do is say, well, how do we kind of make that socially accessible to all of the workforce? It's kind of like, well, remove the bias. Where's the bias? The bias is a human. So let's put it. And I'm just like, it makes sense to a point. I get what you're saying. Kind of. And also, it to a point is like, it just giving us the better data in effort to inform our safety management system. Like all the conversations that we, you know, if you're having these conversations with the bot, and at the same time, the bot's building you a psychometric profile as well of your company, you know, like as long as we take that stuff and it informs our decisions and I don't think it would be the bot's fault. I think it would be human's fault. I think what will happen is we're nice and lazy. So we'll just go, I want that bot to tell me what to do.
Yeah.
I don't want to make the decision. And then when something goes wrong, I can go, well, the bot told me. The bot told me to do that. Like kind of humans need to take a bit of responsibility here, don't we? And let that the AI kind of enable us, don't you think?
Yeah, no, look, I love that perspective, you know, and to be honest, I've never sat down and thought about it like that, but you're absolutely right? So like here, what we're trying to do, and I'm paraphrasing what you just said a little bit here, is basically utilize the AI to remove a bias that we know exists, right? And we know that the bias exists because safety has traditionally been very compliance-driven, very punitive as well, right? We know that the problem with safety is the perception is that it's very finger pointing and blame driven, and we're trying to and people perceive it to be like that. Whereas here, we can defer that to something that actually isn't emotional or very personal. It's just doing it from the facts or from the data that it gets given. And by removing some of that little bit of that human factor, we're perhaps taking away some of the bias. But I really like that. And maybe there's a paper or something that we could do to talk about that kind of stuff.
To make it people centered, you need to remove the people kind of thing, don't you? Like you have to remove that person to make it accessible to the person. That's fascinating in a way.
Yeah. And we've got to keep it. And then to the second part, that we have to stop deferring decision making to AI and things like that, right? AI, I think, is a tool in our toolkit to help us make a decision. And the same way that there's lots of different things that contribute to our decision making process, I think that AI is just one of those things. It's not the thing that makes the decision for us. It's one of a whole multitude of things that helps us and drives us to make a better decision, a better informed decision.
Mm. Oh, this is fascinating. And you know, when you really get into it, like you take some of the challenges we have within safety that I think a smart kind of visual and kind of, you know, the kind of written AI as well, that we struggle with kind of acknowledging the successes that happen throughout a day as well. Like, so we as safety people, let's say your bot is not a bot. Let's say your bot is actually me, the safety professional, excuse me. And the conversation is so negative. Like, boss, we've had an accident. What went wrong? You know, what went wrong? What did you do wrong? I mean, what went wrong to make this happen? But, you know, everything, why didn't we follow the procedure? Blah, blah, blah. Like, and in this kind of transition, as we're going over to this new view safety, we're about trying to acknowledge what went wrong, obviously, and learn from it. That is part of it, but also acknowledge all the other stuff, the context, the presence of positives, which is really hard. Like a lot of people have this argument around that phrase, the presence of positives. Like we talk about, have a look at what is safety. Well, safety is what you're doing right now that makes us safe. So the presence of positive actions towards being safer, right? And now people are like, well, how am I going to count that?
Yeah.
How am I going to go around and count that? And for me, I'm just like, well, that's something AI can do. Do you know what I mean? You know, just go around and spot in it, you know, the visual learning, the conversations we're having, you know, what was happening right before it happened. You know, we were doing this, that's a positive tick, you know, tick, count the positive, count the positive. So then imagine that dashboard that you're presenting the board or you're presenting for your decision making that doesn't just say what traditionally all of our accident and incident data says, which is this went wrong there, this went wrong here, and we're trying to reduce the amount of stuff gone wrong. We have the stuff that's gone wrong because we need that to inform our decisions, but also we have all the stuff that's going right every single day as well, which is really hard for us to comprehend because you would be just counting stuff all day. But I feel like tech can really help us in that space.
Yeah, and look, this. So you touched upon this thing. So we're talking to this psychologist, and it's about reframing some of the questions to be a positive light, and also asking positive questions, right? So it's like, what went right today? What did you do today that you're really, really proud of, and that you'd like to share with other people? You know, so we're looking at random times during the day, the bot asking this question. So then you can take that thing, so that thing that they did right, put it into a database that other people can learn from it, right? Where, so when someone asks a question about, I don't know, doing a crane lift, and then this conversation has been tagged automatically that it's about a crane lift that went really, really well, it automatically will start telling them some of the things that went really well. And one thing that really struck me in what you just said is that we're collecting all of this data about things that go wrong so that we can make sure that these things don't go wrong in the future. But why don't we collect things about the things that are going well so we can make sure that things go even better in the future, right? So that
exactly
good, right? And the vision learning stuff, you could flip that quite easily, right? Why don't we spot the number of times everybody was wearing their full PPE? Why don't we spot the number of times there was, or the length of time that there wasn't a single handrail missing or every single sign was perfect, right? And you're right, the AI, rather than, obviously, if you were to do that as humans, you'd be there sitting there counting something every single day, and you could be pissed of time. But the AI can do that and very, 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 very easily. And so you can start picking some of this up. So that, look, that's a perfect opportunity for us to sort of start spotting the prevalence of positive within our industry.
Mm, definitely, definitely. I can see it now. The Crash McPherson, the Crash McPherson. There's something there. I can see it. The McCash. There we go. Got it. The McCash. Nailed it. I can see it now, mate.
Maybe we shouldn't send this podcast out, and because we might have just struck on a $50 billion idea.
I feel like I need to cut this whole section out because you don't want to like give our idea away.
but look, I agree, and we definitely need to start moving away from being punitive and being even within AI, like you said, right? It's using AI to start blaming people and pointing fingers at people because it's not helpful, right? It's not a constructive or sort of promoting the right behaviors.
Yeah, definitely. It just encourages that us and them kind of culture as well, and that fear, yeah, that fear driven culture, which I think could be exacerbated so much when you've got technology involved in that type of process. I love that you've got a psychologist involved like that. That's amazing. And you've touched on that a minute ago as well, when you said about psychology. What was your thought process around that? Did you always know you were going to get psychologists involved, or is it something dropped that made you go, shit, we need a psychologist for this process?
So I've always wanted to make sure that the bot has the mindful element to it. I want to make sure that the bot speaks to people on a human level, right? I want to get it away from, eventually I want people to stop realizing that they're talking to a bot and feel like they're talking to another person, right? I always wanted to get it that way. But the fact that we've got this person it's not just one person, it's two or three people involved this early was actually by mistake, by accident. Cool. We were having a conversation with somebody who'd worked for the UN, and they were doing some stuff, and they said, look, we think that this app has huge implications in the wellness of people when they're going into natural disasters or post-conflict areas, and they're trying to help these people, and there's a huge problem with the psychology of these people and that, and we think that this is a great potential tool. And so it sort of developed from that conversation into what were some of the things that I've been talking about today. So yes, I've always wanted to have this element involved. The fact that it's already involved has actually been an accident, but a happy accident.
I love accidents. I love things like that. My wife used to work with a lady, and her IT company was called Serendip IT. It was like a happy accident. And I thought it was such a good name. And I remember saying to Sherry, like, that's such a good name. Why did she come? And she, because she kind of accidentally started her company. And then that was it. Yeah, yeah, I was like, oh, wow, that's awesome. I love a happy accident.
That's good. It's good. And then the other element that we've recently brought on board is a pure sort of data scientist, someone actually from the industry who's then taken an interest in data science. And that's another part that fascinates me, you know, data science and data visualization, you know, like what we can do when we visualize the data in a different way. So rather than just plotting it on a fucking Excel graph and then saying, oh, look, this thing's been going off into the sky, there's so many different ways that we can plot this data that instantly gives you an insight just by looking at it. Just by cutting the data and visualizing it in a certain way, you can spot an insight that a 1,000-page report wouldn't be able to tell you, wouldn't be able to explain to you, just because, and it is a little bit cliched that a picture tells 1,000 words, but like some of the stuff that I can see, that I've seen that can be done with data visualization, it astounds me.
Yeah, it's powerful, man. It's so powerful. And this is the, like, I love that you've got a data scientist involved, because I think that, for me, I think every company should have a data scientist. Like every department produces some form of data and graph. And safety does it, finance does it. Everyone produces some form of data and graph. And none of us have been trained on interpreting data, managing data, visualizing data, anything like that, and how to communicate the right message over in the most effective way.
Yeah.
So for me, you know, having a data scientist department or whatever, and obviously, you know, it depends on the size of your organization, but, you know, these big organizations,
you know, this safety data that we're getting, it shouldn't be us processing it, because we're shit at stuff like that. Like, that's not what we're trained to do. When none of us are trained to, and some of us love that stuff, and you've probably got a passion in it and you become good at it. That's fine. But none of us have been trained to interpret data. You know, that's like saying, it's just a half-assed attempt to say, well, you guys have some form of data, so you must own that data and then tell me what it looks like. I'm just like, how do you want me to do that? I mean, all I'm doing is I'm on Excel, and then I just click smart charts or whatever. And I make a pivot table, and then I keep playing around with that pivot table for about 2 weeks until it gives me something that I think is right. And then boom, that's it. That's it. And I'm just like, right, give that to the board. Nailed it. Yes, absolutely nailed it.
And to be honest, James, it is heading in that direction though. So the more and more sort of larger corporations that I speak to and I work with are employing data scientists or people in that field. You know, data engineers is another term that I've heard, and definitely it is moving that way, right? And just simply because, like another cliche, that data is the new oil, right? Everybody knows that the companies that are the most successful and the most valuable in the world at the moment have figured out what to do with their data. And most of them, unfortunately, have figured out how to monetize it. But I think that's just one piece of value, right, from data. There's so much other value that we can extract from data. And as we transition into fully blown industry 4.0, the companies that are going to succeed are the companies that work out three things, right? One, how to capture this data in a very efficient, structured manner. Two, how to store it and secure this data, because that's something that's really, really important. And then three, how to analyze it and get some value out of the data. So most successful companies, I think, are the ones that are going to crack those three things.
Definitely. It's so, I think data is vital as we move forward. And I think you're right. You know, when you can be scared of it, and I am probably a little bit like that, you know, going through numbers and charts, to me, it just switches me off. Like I'm a story person, I'm a verbal person. I can't stand, you know, charts and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I really struggle with that.
But James, the numbers tell a story as well though, right? Just so you gotta think about like some of these charts and numbers, and again, going back to data visualization. So you can get this stuff to tell you a really, really story, a really, really compelling story, and actually very, very colorful formats as well, right? So it doesn't necessarily have to be the Excel charts that you constantly used to see.
And this is exactly my point. It's like, we've seen the kind of potential of a good chart and somebody that knows what that chart's trying to say through COVID, you know, Professor Chris Whitty and his team, and you know, they've got a chart and they explain it, and you're just like, when they put it up, you're just like, oh my God, look at that. There's lines going everywhere. And he's like, right, here's how this works. You see the one on the left, and that means this, and the one on the right, that means this. And as we follow that line along there, that means this. And you're just like, and that's the difference, is having somebody that really understands that chart, communicate it across, and tell that story. Because I think you're right, they can tell a story, but if you're anything like me, numbers don't tell a story. They just look like a blur on a spreadsheet, and I must have dyscalculus or something, because numbers just don't work with me. I can't do dates, I can't do times, anything that numbers are involved, it ain't me. But there's nothing wrong with that either. Acknowledging that and being within a company and saying, we need a data scientist, someone that can tell me what those numbers look like.
Yeah.
And if the AI works to complement that by collecting that, then mate, that's a win-win for me.
And to a certain extent as well, you can get the AI to do some of the analytics for you as well, right? It will start, as soon as the data is coming in, it'll start spotting trends and patterns between the various different data sets that are coming through to it. So it takes that element away of it. Some of that might be fear, right? Like you said, and some of it might be incompetence as well, right? Not, and I don't mean that in a negative sense, just purely because that's not what you're trained to do.
Total incompetence. Like the definition of incompetence is me with numbers.
and so some of that is also dangerous, right? People who aren't, like you said, trained to do stuff with this data, trained to do stuff with these numbers, actually trying to shoehorn them or fudge them into telling a story that they've already made up, right? That's another form of bias. which is you alluded it to before, right? Where you take these pivot tables and start cutting them until they tell you the story that you think that you want to be told.
Not
necessarily what's actually there.
That's a great point. I didn't even think of that, but that is literally what I just said. How can I fudge this data to tell the story I want to tell? That's so true. And we do that. We definitely do.
It happens in construction all the time, right? I've worked in the industry long enough to know that, like, some of the commercial teams and that they massage the numbers to tell a story, right? And it happens within safety all the time as well, right? We'd be naive to think that it doesn't happen. And so, to try and open some of this up again, to democratize it, to open it up to the masses, you know, I think is the right way forward. And look, I'm not saying that I've found that I've fallen upon the perfect formula to be able to do this, and what I'm currently doing is going to be the thing that's going to crack all of it. But I definitely think that we're on the start of this journey, and there's something in it. I 100% believe that there's something in what we're doing, and where we end up in another 5 years' time might be very different to where we're starting from now. But we've started, and that's the most important thing.
Mm. This is fascinating. Oh, we could talk about this for hours and hours.
We could.
There is there's one thing I just want to address on what you just said, which I thought, and then there's one more thing that I want to talk about, and then sure. we'll both go and enjoy our days. The other thing, the thing you said there that really interested me was, if you've got that kind of, you said about, you know, acknowledging the biases of massaging the numbers and stuff, because inherently, humans are vulnerable to influence. You know, if we say, if your bonus is tied to, I mean, in my opinion, you shouldn't tie bonuses to safety, but let's say you did, right? Your safety bonus is tied to the amount of accidents you have, right? And then your boss has said, you ain't getting your bonus if accidents go up this year. And then you put your numbers in, and just so happened it gone whoop straight up like that. And you're like, oh, crap. Or you've got a trend, you know, your AI's come up and it says you're trending towards, you know, a mass increase, and you know your boss is going to hit that fan. Interestingly, I think that an AI could not be there to catch out the person, like, not to be like, oh, naughty, naughty, and someone else can say, but actually just to say, you know, the AI has said it, boom, that's it, it's there in the system. So it influences the person to just say it as it is. You know, the AI has told me there's a trend, and that's it. You know, because the AI is not vulnerable to that bonus or the relationship with your boss or something. So again, we come back to that thing we had earlier, is if we pick out and spot the biases and vulnerabilities of being human, which is, you know, it is to be human, is to have all of those things.
And we
plug the holes with this technology, then I think that's where this relationship and this revolution will be amazing.
Yeah. And look, so just on, if we take that example that you just mentioned, right? And obviously there's a million different variations to this, but let's just take the one that you just mentioned, is that this manager whose bonus is linked to accidents, right? He shouldn't realize on the day before his bonus numbers are going to be added up that there's too many accidents, right? He should have realized on maybe day three or day four that this is the trend, this is the direction of travel. If I don't do something about it, I'm not going to get my bonus. And so the AI or capturing data can start helping you do something about it before it gets to that stage where you've got to fudge the numbers, right? So, and look, this is me with rose-tinted glasses and thinking that everybody's really honest in the world and everything. But genuinely, all right, if we can enable some of these people, because I like to think that the best in people, right? I like to think that everybody wants to do a good job. Nobody wants to kill anybody on our projects. Nobody wants to blame anybody, right? I genuinely believe that. And so giving them the tools to help them to do that, right? Where some of the systems can just get out of their way so that these people can do their jobs in a safe way is the best way of doing it, right? And so with some of these tools that we've just mentioned around AI and some of the technology that's coming in, that's what it needs to do. It doesn't need to be there to start pointing fingers and telling people off or telling people how to do their job. It just needs to help them to do their job better, right? It needs to be a tool in their tool set.
I love that. There's one last thing I want to ask you, and then we'll nip this in the bud. How do you go about that process of getting that AI to learn? Like, what does that look like?
So there's a couple of ways. The way that we've chosen to do it, but all of it involves massive amounts of data, right? So you've got to have a lot of data. Up until recently, it had to be very, very structured. So you had to have data that was formatted in a very, very specific way. It had to have, and then you had to also have a balance of data, which I alluded to right at the beginning, to make sure that you don't introduce confirmational biases into the data. And I say it used to because now you can actually get tools that help you structure unstructured data, right? You've actually got AI tools that help you structure data, right? And which are really, really impressive, and have another set of problems, which I won't go into today. But you need a lot of data. And what you essentially do is that you split that data up most of the time into three, but sometimes into two. So you split the data up into training data and then validation data, and then you push data back through again to just make sure that all of the training that you've done and the prediction that you're basing off of it aligns to the training data that you've got, right? So let's say you've got 10,000 pieces of data. This is a really low number, actually. You'd split that probably 70-30, right? So 7,000 and 3,000. You'll train it with the 7,000 and then test it against the 3,000, right? Mm-hmm. So you'll say that the 7,000 needs to predict X, Y, and Z. And then what you do is the 3,000 things, you push it through and see if it predicted and came up with the same answers as the actual data did for those 3,000. There's a whole load of technical stuff which my technical team and that do in terms of making sure that that the quality of the data is good in the first place, and passing it through various different pipelines to massage the data, take out spelling mistakes, grammar, and all sorts of other things as well. I probably described it to be quite complicated. It's actually not as complicated as people think it is.
And you said 10,000 was a low number. Like what's a normal number?
It depends on what you want to do, to be honest. Right. So as an example, we've trained our bot on about 40,000 different data sets, or 40,000 rows of numbers. And from that, our algorithms on certain questions is coming up to be about 97% accurate. Which is okay. So the more data you have, the more accurate your algorithms will become. And then the beauty with things like machine learning is that the more people use it, the better it gets over time. So you can imagine as people are using it, that same data then goes into your training set, right? So the more data that you're getting, and because our data is coming through our bot, it's automatically structured. The bot structures the data so rigidly so that it can just automatically goes onto the heap, and it makes our training process much more efficient.
I suspect you have to be kind of really cognitive of the mindful of the diversity of the not the data, but the people doing the data. So like you must have to be really going, right, have we got all our ethnic minorities? Well, have we just got every race really, or as much different race as possible? Because we all have different tendencies and different cultures, different religions, different, accents, different, you could just look in England, for example, and just the kind of stereotypical traditional, whatever, I'm mincing my words here, but like, even if you just looked at like north of England versus south of England, there are cultural differences there, let alone, where you are compared to England. So you must have to, surely you must have to be really conscious of that as well in that data set.
Yeah. And so look, we haven't gotten to that level of sophistication. What you're talking about now is some of the semantics and that drive it, but that's definitely something that's on our roadmap to have a look at. We've recently started allowing people to talk to the bot in their native language. So we've got six languages in there. So we've got French, Spanish, Hindi, Urdu, Mandarin, and I can't remember the other language. But that automatically is going to start introducing nuances, right, that we haven't even thought about, that we haven't even come across before, because of the way syntax, the grammar, the local ways, like you said, of describing something. There's certain words that don't exist in other languages, right? And so they have to be phonetically spelled in that native language, if that makes sense, right? So there's not a direct translation for a word. So an English word would sound exactly the same in, say, Arabic, just be written in Arabic text, right? Perhaps. Yeah, and so yeah, there's all of these nuances that we're coming across, and figuring out how we deal with those, especially when they go into our training set. Yeah, it's fascinating, and there's a whole other science around that as well.
Because I mean, just that example you said there, like, just a couple of examples come in my head. Like, I was watching a documentary about cycling, and in cycling you have a leaderboard, and in this this was an Italian documentary, translated into English, and it kept calling it a scoreboard.
Okay.
Not a scoreboard. You don't get scores in cycling. You get a leader.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's it. And it's how interesting that little nuance was, that, you know, in the translation, it was kind of lost in translation, and then it becomes something completely different. Like, it's scoreboard and leaderboard is very different. And if you just look at, like, silly little things, like, you know, in England, you've got up north that call a roll a cob. You know, somewhere else they call a roll a bap, and, you know,
or a butty,
or a butty. Do you know what I mean? So if you get an accent being like, oh, Bob slipped on his butty, and then up north you've got Bob slipped on his cob, and the AI is like, what the fuck?
So there's all sorts of stuff. And look, the other side of this, the flip side of this, though, is that some of that what we consider edge cases, right? And we're never going to be able to cater for every single edge case in the world. So that the way, I guess, AI and some of this technology generally tries to work is that if you can capture 80-90% of the cases, you're doing really, really well, right? Yeah. There's always going to be edge cases in tech. And that's the reason that you constantly have upgrades and you get updates on your mobile phone and stuff like that, is that people essentially, when you as a user are testing the app, right? You're constantly testing the app, and when something happens unexpectedly, people report a bug and things like that, and then that goes back in, and that's another potential edge case that they've resolved on how to do it, and that's the way that we're going to approach it as well, right? Is that there's going to be this stuff's going to come up, and we'll deal with it as and when it comes. We'll try and capture as much as we, or think about as much as we possibly can beforehand, but there's always going to be things that we haven't thought about. And I, for me, that's the beauty of it, right? That's the beauty of tech evolution.
Yeah. No, it's so exciting. No, it's cool. I love, and I think you have good biases, you know, the way you talk about it, the way it's kind of relational focused, the way it's people focused, and the aim, your aim here is the AI complements what we as humans do in safety, and it complements the worker and so on and so forth. So I think in that case, it's kind of like, to your earlier point, an AI can absorb or inherit the biases of a person. You know, I think it's good that you have these kind of biases, because they're good biases to have. They're good biases and bad biases, and that's a good one, I think, in my opinion.
I appreciate that. And look, it's all going to stand to reason to see what it comes out like in the next 4 or 5 years. But like I said, I definitely feel like we're on a journey, we're on a path, and it feels like there's something in it, right? And just even having this conversation with you, there's bits that are racing in my mind about what we could potentially do with this, and that's what I'm doing, right? We're just on this journey, and I'm open to listening to ideas. I'm not so arrogant to think that I've solved it, that this is the only way to be able to do it. I really want this to be something that works for safety, works for our industry, and ultimately helps us to save lives.
Awesome. I love that, mate. Right, we'll nip it in the bud. So do you want to give us a little outro to your company? Is the app available, or is it still in testing, or, you know, what's it? So can people get hold of it, and if they can, how do they do that?
So yes, the applications are available on both iOS and the Android Play Store. If you download it, you wouldn't be able to do much with it. You'd have to contact us you'd have to contact us to set up an account. But yeah, we're very much in production now. So we're out of the sort of early MVP stages. We've got a couple of pilots live with a number of companies. And then I guess the other sort of, there's two sort of different models for our organization. One is that you just take the Stock app, the way that we've built it, or the way we've envisaged safety to be managed, and then you can utilize it out of the box like that. But with most sort of medium or large organizations, we understand that they've got existing processes and that. And so we adapt our system to work with them. Going back to what I was saying before is that the technology should work for you, not the other way around. And so we've made it one of the biggest things when we designed it from the beginning was to make sure that our platform was adaptable for people to utilize and to manage safety the way that they want to manage safety. We don't dictate as a technology firm how you should be managing safety on your project or in your country. It's available to download. You can catch us on our website, safety.ai. Safety spelled slightly differently. It's SAIFETY because we're putting the AI into safety. We're on LinkedIn and on all the other social media channels. So you can interact with us there. Reach out to me through you if you want, James. Happy to answer any questions and keep on working towards sort of digitizing this industry.
Cool, man. That's exciting. I'll put all the links in the show notes as well so people can get hold of this stuff there as well. But thank you very much, Prakash. That was amazing conversation.
Thank you. No, it was. It's brilliant. Like we said, this was completely unscripted. So fascinating conversation.
Yeah, no, it's great.
Okay, peeps, hope you enjoyed that chat with Prakash. Obviously, there is a place for AI and people like Prakash are helping us kind of pave the way, and he's leading the way really himself. So I'm really excited to see what comes off his work. He's just an all-round awesome guy as well. We actually recorded this what feels like a lifetime ago. So I think it's about time I reconnected with Prakash. So if you're listening, mate, bell me, yeah? Let's have a chat. I hope you enjoyed that chat. Hope you got some value out of it. If you did, give us a rate, review, share, whatever it is, however you want to help us. We appreciate it. Subscribe, like, comment, whatever. Everything you do, we appreciate. Don't forget to check out Paradigm Human Performance HSE subscription service. And don't forget to check out their website with the Learning Organization webinar as well. If you're keen to find out more about what I'm doing, follow me on LinkedIn and Twitter as well. Go to www.rebrandingsafety.com for some more if you want to work with us. Or go to projectmeletium.com, also linked in the description below if you can't be asked to spell Meletium, if you want to just become a better safety professional. Otherwise, I'll catch you next week. Safe.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the host and its guests and do not necessarily reflect the position of the companies. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are examples only based on limited and dated open source information and should not be utilised in real life as the only solution available. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the companies. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, or otherwise, without prior written permission from James McPherson.